Welcome to Attention Talk Radio, the show centered around paying attention to attention, with your host, Attention Coach Jeff Copper.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to this edition of Attention Talk Radio. We've got a great show for you tonight. Our topic is Defiant ADHD Teens, Tips from the Trenches. This is part two, or a sequel to a show that we had done back in November 14th in the year 2012. Everybody, I'm your host, Attention Coach Jeff Copper, and with us in our virtual studio is my co-host, Kirsten Milliken. Kirsten, how are you tonight?
I am on vacation tonight. How are you, Jeff?
I'm doing good. That's right. She's on vacation. She's taking a little island here to kind of help us out tonight on this particular show. So, Kirsten, we thank you for donating your time to our discussion tonight.
Absolutely. I wouldn't miss this episode, so I'm looking forward to the conversation.
And I'm looking forward to it, too. In preparation, I actually listened to the show that we did with Dr. Robbins in its entirety just before this, back in November 14th in 2012. And I have to tell you, Kirsten, you asked some great questions. It was action-packed. I think it was it's got to be one of our better shows. It was good. It was informative. It was insightful. And I walked away with some nuggets that I didn't really expect. How about you?
Yeah, I mean, Dr. Robbins, his work is phenomenal, and I think that, you know, when you're looking at working with teenagers and teenagers with ADHD in particular, one of the bigger frustrations for parents is, you know, when their teenager is being defiant, whether it's a pervasive problem or even just once in a while. So, you know, talking about that, and of course tonight we're going to be talking more about the treatment aspects and the steps to that, I just think it's so invaluable to parents to give this information. So,
we'll summarize a little bit last time, but what was interesting to me is you talked about kid characteristics, parent characteristics, the environment, but parenting style is a big part of that, and that's the piece that you can influence the most. And tonight, what I hope he's going to do is kind of share some scenarios and stuff so that parents can kind of maybe get some coaching on that a little bit to see what that really looks like. So I'm pretty excited about it. Real quickly, tonight is January the 23rd in the year 2013 at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Our usual announcements, everybody, the CHAD conference in the 2012 was last November. It was a great conference. It's time to start thinking about the 2013 conference, which this year is in the D.C. area. In November, early November, you can find more information about that by going to chadd.org. And their regional conference, which is typically in May, they actually haven't set that yet. As I understand it, it's going to be in the Dallas area. They're still negotiating venues. As soon as they nail that down, they'll be making some announcements on that and look out. And just another side, CHAD is actually revamping their website, which I've been talking to some of the people over there. It's pretty exciting from what I hear. It's going to come out in February, so just be on the lookout for that. You are listening to Attention Talk Radio, which is a part of the Attention Talk Network, which includes Attention Talk News and Attention Talk Video. Kirsten heads up Attention Talk News. Briefly, Kirsten, you want to share a little bit about that?
I would love to. Actually, that edition just came out today, so twice a month. You can have Attention Talk News delivered to your inbox, and we're including some thoughts on past shows that we've done, as well as the calendar of recent and upcoming shows. So you can listen to those and put things on your calendar that you might want to listen to that are coming up. There is some guest contributions on there, different ways of looking at attention. And, of course, we always include one of the videos, Jeff, that you've been putting out recently, some Attention Talk Video. Those are some terrific interviews. And then the Attention Teasers, which are my favorite part, where, you know, you've got a brain teaser or a puzzle to solve, and you may have to look at things a little bit differently to come up with the answer, and the solutions are offered at the end, so you don't have to wait until the next edition. And again, if you just go to attentiontalknews.com, you can sign up for that and get it to your inbox twice a month.
And what I like about the attention teasers is, as we do that, what I encourage is to pay attention to what you're paying attention to as you solve those problems, because if you can witness that, which is a metacognition exercise, much of coaching sometimes is pausing and noticing what you're doing, because when you pause and notice it, it puts you in choice to change your behavior, which is kind of exciting. Along with Attention Talk News, there's Attention Talk Video, your ADHD talk show station. Weekly I interview an ADHD expert, which is hosted on YouTube. This current one is, I think it was interviewing Jody Sleeper Triplett on Are All Teens Coachable? She had some great insights on that, and I offer that up because tonight we're talking about defiant teens, And certainly there's the show we did with Dr. Robbins back in November, but you also might want to go to Tension Talk Video and check out the interview I did with Jody, because I think you'll find it very insightful. So the last announcement is we got all kinds of information coming to you, but a lot of it's consolidated. If you're a Facebook person, go to facebook.com/attentiontalkradio. We're posting the news, we're posting the videos, we're posting the radio, and it's a great place to go, or catch us on Twitter. So with that, we got a lot of time to cover. I mean, that a lot of material in a short period of time. So, Kirsten, you want to introduce our guest?
I would love to. Dr. Arthur Robin specializes in the assessment and treatment of children and adolescents and adults with ADHD, adolescent eating disorders, and parent-teen conflict. He has actually written 4 books, ADHD in Adolescence, Diagnosis and Treatment. The second one is Negotiating Parent-Adolescent Conflict, a Behavioral Family System Approach. The third one is Defiant Teens, which is written with Russell Barkley and, I can't come up with a name, but Dr. Edwards. And his most recent book is Your Defiant Teen, which it sounds like is, I think that's the one that's coming out with the second edition. One of the Defiant Teen books, I think he's coming out with a second edition, so that's something to be looking for, because this, as we said, is a big topic right now. Right now, he's the chief of psychology and the director of psychology training at Children's Hospital in Michigan. He's also has been inducted into the Chad Hall of Fame because of the contributions that he's made in the field of ADHD. So welcome back, Dr. Robin. I'm excited to talk with you again tonight.
Thank you for that wonderful information and introduction, and I'm glad to be here.
You know, I can't impress upon our listeners enough. If you're listening to this show and you haven't listened to the first show, it's a crime. You need to go back and listen to it. It was November the 14th, 2012. Go back in our archives. You can go to Attention Talk Radio, scroll down. You have to dig back, or if you're on iTunes, just scroll down to that particular date. But real quickly, in that first interview, we talked about what is defiance behavior, and Dr. Robbins kind of outlined that when you have a child, there's a relationship. You have your child's characteristics, you have your parents' characteristics, you have the environment or the life space, and you have the parenting style. All these are factors that kind of go into it. And what I took from it, Dr. Robbins, is the biggest single area that a parent has control of is actually their parenting style. And we talked about teens in the space and the concept of oppositional defiant disorder, but you like to call it as oppositional defiant families, which I think was really telling, because it's a system here that's kind of going on, and you can't necessarily change the inborn characteristics of the child or the parent and stuff, but if you focus on the style, you might actually make some headway. And what was interesting to me was my experience, I think I shared in that show, was we took some golden retrievers, at least my wife and I did when we were young, to train them, and we realized, at least I realized pretty early on, that it wasn't about training the dogs. The trainer was really training us, because if we could provide consistency and stuff to the dog would actually do what we needed to do. And I just found that fascinating. With that being said, am I representing what we talked about the first time accurately, or is there anything you'd like to correct?
No, I think you're representing it very accurately. Defiance or opposition takes two people to be involved in it, and parents really can make significant changes in how they act towards their teenagers, and within reason, they will get back in return reciprocal positive changes within reason, and so I think that's a very accurate representation.
One of the things go ahead, Kirsten.
Can I just summarize for people who are listening that didn't hear the last show? Again, hopefully they'll go back, but I don't think I heard you say that Dr. Robin identified the 4 factors that contribute to having this situation where you have oppositional defiant family issues, and it was the teen's characteristics, the parent's characteristics, their environment or, you know, the space that they're living in, and also the parent's parenting style.
Absolutely.
So I just wanted to kind of lay that out as a template so that people understand that there are, you know, these different areas, and what we're really talking about is, as a parent, where can you intervene? What are your responsibilities in helping to correct this situation?
Absolutely. And so tonight, It's great because a lot of times we have guests come on that want to talk about some stuff, and email correspondence with Dr. Robbins, he really wanted to get into kind of the specifics tonight to give our listeners a little idea what this would kind of look like from a strategy perspective and how it would work. And he really wanted to talk about interventions, which is news to our ears because it's really good to actually hear what these things look like. So, Dr. Robbins, I'm going to give you a little bit of free rein here a little bit, and if you could just kind of talk a little bit about the strategy and maybe kind of give us some examples. I will have to interrupt you at some point in time for a couple commercial breaks, but if you can frame this out so our parents can see what it looked like, it would be awesome.
Okay. Well, many of the things that I'm going to say, some parents may find that they can use these strategies on their own, and others may find that they're going to need professional help to make these strategies work. So I just want to give that caveat.
Uh-huh.
I think the first thing that parents can do in their parenting style is try to put some positivity in their daily routines with their youngsters. There's often so much negativity, arguing, backtalk, and so on, and they're so locked in, and it's a chicken and egg problem. But parents could take the first step, and the first step that I advise parents to take is this activity that we call one-on-one time. Invite your teenager for 15, 20 minutes a day to do a fun activity of the teen's choice. And don't criticize, don't command, don't correct. Just have fun, like perhaps you did when the teenager was a lot younger, but haven't recently because there's so much negativity going on. It's designed to just put a few minutes of positivity in an otherwise negative sea, a sea of negativity. And as a therapist and psychologist, I work really closely with parents and with teenagers to do this one-on-one time, have fun together activity, because I find if that doesn't happen first, everything else I would have to offer them isn't going to work because they're so locked into a seemingly endless cycle of negativity. So after parents have done that kind of activity with their teenagers for a couple of weeks, 2 or 3 weeks at least, hopefully 3-4 times a week if they can, then I have them further build positivity by looking to catch their teenagers acting positively. So catch your teenager being good 5 or 6 times a day. Spontaneously find a reason to say something nice, to give a hug, a touch on the shoulder, even if it's for some seemingly minor thing. Just make a big deal out of it and catch the teenager being good. This is further building on positivity.
Dr. Robbins, can I interrupt you for a second?
Sure.
I really like what you're saying, and can I just insert a thought? And you correct me if I'm not, but when I'm listening to you, because one of the things about Attention Talk Radio is we like to pay attention to attention, and when you're talking about one-on-one time with the teen, what I'm hearing you say through the lens that I'm looking through is get down and pay attention to them in a way that they're the object of attention on something that they're interested in. And, you know, leave all this stuff at the door. If your teen is really into whatever, get down, spend that time so that you can kind of bond with them, because people like to be the objects of attention. If you can do that, then they feel a bondness or more trust, and this is a way to develop it. So in summary, what I'm hearing is if I'm paying attention to what you're saying is spend the time and pay attention to your teen in an unjudgmental way. Is that a good way of reframing this?
That is a great way to put it. Whatever the teenager wants to do, preferably something you can do at home that doesn't involve going someplace and spending money, but whatever the teenager wants to do, and if the teenager wants no part of it, which some teenagers won't because of such negativity, wait till your son or daughter is doing something you know they like and just kind of stand by and join them and ask to show them. So even if we as a parent hate video games, but that's what the teenager would choose to do, let your teenager teach you how to play a video game. Even if parents are not into texting and teenagers are, if your teenager wants to text back and forth from one room to the next, text back and forth. So it's really got to be what the youngster wants to do. And as you said, no judgment, no criticism, just enjoyment.
And Kirsten, it's interesting to me because as I hear him say that, I sense a little bit as an ADHD parent, there might be some anxiety around that, like maybe this, I'm not very excited about this or whatever, but the trick really here is to actually be authentic with your team to meet them where they are. Would you agree with that?
I would. I mean, so many times parents are saying, you know, my kid is into this, but I'm not into that, so I'm not going to do that with them. And it really is, you know, you got to be the grown-up here. And you may be doing some things that are not on your menu of, you know, top hits of what you'd like to spend your time with. But really what you're looking at is spending time with your teenager. And if that's the top of your list, then you have to do what it takes when they're willing to engage with you. And it might be during an activity like texting or being on the computer, as Dr. Robin's saying. So, yeah.
I think you said a good point. When they're ready to be engaged, is that a key point, Dr. Robbins? Is
that's
to engage
the
them when
point.
They're ready?
But also the point about that the parent has to be the grown up. You can't expect that the teenager is going to be the one to try to break this cycle. The parent who is the grown up has the power and better ability to step back and try to break this cycle of negativity before anything else will work. So being the grown up is really another key phrase there.
So I'm going to say one thing, and I think I'm going to hold my comments because we have a lot of material to go through, Dr. Robbins. But I think one of the keys really is when you're at this stage, that one-on-one time, it's really not about you. It's really about your teen and what they're interested in, and you need to be focused on that. If you can do this, this is very foundational from what I've read, Dr. Robbins, about that is you need to get this thing right first, and then everything else can be built on it. So with that, if you could continue now on the catch them doing things right.
You mean after you've
yes.
done the one-on-one time type activity, more things that I would have parents do next. I mentioned before the catching your teenager being good and praising your teenager a number of times a day to further build on the positivity. And along with that, there are so many things that parents normally correct that teenagers who are, quotes, defiant or oppositional do. And I try to help parents see that they're going to have to let go of those things which are relatively minor. If they want to build a more positive relationship, if they want to change things, they'll have to ignore, quote, minor misbehavior. So I help them try to put in perspective what's important and what they could ignore so that there won't be this negativity going on throughout much of the day. And for example, what they could ignore is relative to their family situation. If you have a teenager who's sneaking out the bedroom window in the middle of the night and hanging out with friends down the street, and the teenager has a messy room, ignore the messy room. The sneaking out in the middle of the night is a much bigger thing. If the messy room is the only problem left and there aren't a lot of other problems, well, maybe the messy room doesn't need to be ignored. But each parent needs to let go of some stuff, basically so they change the ratio of positive to negative comments from 95% negative to hopefully 50-50, although that's a tall order. And so did you want to comment before I went on to the next step?
Well, I want to comment because, right, and maybe this is what you were going to get to next, but, you know, so there's, you know, catching your teen being good, there's two parts to that. One is creating this hierarchy of what's important to address and what really can be let go of. But then, and I'm anticipating that you're going to say, yes, this is what you're going to do next, talking about really what are you going to be giving them, you know, praise for. Am I right that that's where you're going? I don't want to jump the gun on you, but...
Yeah, well, the praising part is really to just find anything they do which is praiseworthy and make at least five, six praise comments a day. We're not yet at praising or shaping specific behaviors. That comes
right
a little bit later. But just the parents, again, tend to make hundreds of negative comments. And so I try to help them see that if they could stick in 5, 10, 15, 20 positive comments with all those negative comments, the atmosphere is going to change a little bit. We're trying to build a positive atmosphere because the next steps, incentive systems, aren't going to work if the atmosphere hasn't been changed from all negative to at least some positive.
I can't
help you.
Go
ahead, Jeff.
Well, I was just going to say, in the coaching world, the first thing you have to do is establish a relationship with somebody so it's a safe environment so that you can kind of build on it. And I'm hearing that part of this is that there. The other thing I'd like to kind of comment on is we're actually trained to pay attention to what people don't do right. I think sometimes it's hard to recognize what people do right because we're not necessarily trained to do that. And when I coach people a lot of time, I like time management stuff. I always kind of point out when they're on time and ask them how they did that because most of them focus on the appointments that they missed. And as a parent, it takes a little bit of training actually to begin to look because a lot of kids do a lot of things right. And if you focus on some of that stuff, it's not natural at first, but if you do it, you can begin to point out what's doing right. They actually do a lot right.
You're absolutely
correct. It's kind of training yourself to be able to recognize it because you're not used to seeing it.
And somebody did an interesting study, I don't know the reference on it, where they looked in different countries around the world. When report cards come home, do parents look first at the A's and B's, or do they look first at the D's, E's, and F's, and what they comment on? And sadly, in the United States, the majority of parents look first at the D's and F's, and in some European countries, they look more at the A's and B's. And this goes along with exactly what you're saying, that we need to help parents look at what's good that their youngsters are doing before they get into looking at the things that need correction.
And Kirsten, you had a question before. By the way, we need to go to break here in a second, but Kirsten, you want to follow up with your question?
Yeah, Dr. Robin, you said find praiseworthy behavior, and I think my understandings of your program is actually that sometimes praiseworthy behavior just means they haven't done anything defiant or, disruptive for maybe, 10 seconds or a minute, or even just a neutral behavior. And I know in my work I often tell parents, if your child sets the table well and they're 15 years old, maybe that's a behavior that they learned a long time ago, but, they did it well again. Make a big deal out of that if the, habit around the house is to always find the things that they're doing wrong. So, just finding those things that are maybe even expected, but they're positive or neutral.
I absolutely agree. And then parents need to see for their teenager how the praise is going to be genuine. Some teenagers won't like gushy, evocative emotional statements. Some teenagers may just want a smile, some a pat on the shoulder. Each parent needs to figure out what's going to work as a method of praise.
I love what you just said. And I also want to kind of highlight, Kirsten, you brought up setting the table. In the last interview with Dr. Robbins, you said something brilliant. If I recall correctly, if you say that to your child to set the table, that doesn't necessarily mean that they know the fork goes on one side and the knife goes on the other. And we were talking about, they just have a 14-year-old brain at that point in time, and sometimes you have to kind of identify that. So I'm throwing that in there as a little – listen to the last show and listen for that. Dr. Robbins, we need to go to a break. Before we go, if anybody has information or they want to contact you or to get your books, what's the best place to do that?
The best place would be email, which is arobin@med.wayne.edu. So arobin@med.wayne.edu.
And you have you've been a part of CHAD. You're also a part of ADDA, and I know that you're up in the Midwest area, right?
Right. Well, we're in Michigan, and in addition to CHAD regional and national conferences, it just so happens that I recently learned that the Attention Deficit Disorder Association, or ADDA, will be having a conference in Detroit this summer, July 19th through 21st, I believe. And anybody who's interested, go to their website, add.org, and they're starting to put up information about that conference.
And since it's in your area, I'm going to assume you're going to be there, right?
Yes, I will.
All right, so that's worth the price of admission. So, everybody, with that, we'll be right back after these messages.
Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio. We are CHAD, the nation's leading nonprofit organization serving the community impacted by ADHD. CHAD and Attention Magazine provide science-based information about ADHD to families, professionals, the media, and the general public. Attention is the only publication in which your paid advertising promotes the mission of leadership, advocacy, research, education, and support for the ADHD community. Interested? Advertise in Attention Magazine and CHAD's website at chadd.org or call 240-487-2314.
Make every moment count with Time Timer, a sensitive solution for ADHD time management. It shows how much time is left using a bright red disc that gets smaller as time passes. To place an order for a Time Timer, all you have to remember is TimeTimer.com.
Hey. Hey, you.
Are you the parents of a child with ADHD? Does your child need successful task completion structures? We are Hey You, and we make routines fun and easy.
It's time to rise, so open your eyes.
Go to heyyouadhd.com and download our task completion programs today.
Shake it up. Shake it out. Move our body around.
You deserve the best-trained ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to addca.com and click on Find a Coach.
You're listening to Attention Talk Radio. And now, back to the show.
Welcome back, everybody, to this edition of Attention Talk Radio. We're with Dr. Robin talking about defiant ADHD teen tips from the trenches. Before the break, we were kind of reviewing a little bit of the last show and kind of teeing some stuff up. And I want to continue with the discussion here in a second, but I was listening in the commercial break, and I realized I actually have to pause. And I want to do a thank you right now because all of our listeners out there, Attention Talk Radio would not be possible. There's an enormous amount of work that goes into this, both finding guests, preparing for it, doing research. Kirsten does it, I do it, et cetera, and it wouldn't be possible if it weren't for our sponsors. And it just kind of dawned on me that based on our current discussions with Time Timer, we're getting ready to come up on our two-year anniversary of them supporting us. And it's our sponsors like that that allow us to do what we do to bring this content to you. And I encourage you, if you can, just drop a line to Time Timer and say thanks for supporting Attention Talk Radio, because it's they've been there through us through thick and thin from the beginning to the end. So I just need to thank them for that. So moving on, Dr. Robbins, we're working our way through this stuff, and I'm going to try to be more quiet and not make as many comments so you can get through this, because we do want to hear some of the interventions. So last we were talking, it was about picking and choosing your battles. You know, do you want to really get upset about the messy room, or do you want to deal with them sneaking out over the night? And I thought that was a great way of comparing and contrasting. Say, you know, put it in context. Which would you rather fight over? I think I'd rather focus on trying to keep the team from leaving and let the messy room kind of go by. So, can you pick it up from there?
Yes, I will. What I'd like to do is just briefly outline the next few steps that I work with parents and teenagers on, and then maybe go back and talk about them with discussion and your comments in a little more detail, but just kind of lay it out. So the next thing that I do is I teach parents to use incentives before punishments. That's like a golden rule in changing your parenting style with defiant teens. So I teach them all about the creative use of positive incentive systems. There's a million different ways that parents could creatively do this. I teach them to write, for example, behavioral contracts with their teenagers, with the younger teenagers and preteens. It may be point charts, behavior charts. So we use positive incentives the best we can, and the teenagers participate in developing these systems. After parents have had positive experiences with their teenagers using the positive incentives, only then, as necessary, would I work with the families on adding punishment techniques, and they are usually only if the parents haven't gotten far enough in encouraging change of more severe problem behaviors with positive incentives. So they're at that point only do we talk a little bit about punishment. I'll come back to examples of that in a little while. Then the rest of the intervention is with the the parents and teenagers in the room together for all of the meetings, and I teach them to make the distinction between issues that the parents and teenagers can negotiate together and those which they can't really negotiate, that really just have to be because they're basic values for living in civilized society. And for those that they can negotiate, I help the family learn the steps of problem solving to work them out, and I coach them to problem solve issues of disagreement first in my presence and then at home. And as they're getting into that, we then move to particular ways that they get each other angry by their communication style, put downs, interruptions, defensive comments, and so on and so forth. And we work to help them pinpoint and change the style of their communication. And finally, the intervention in its last steps, we go to identifying any extreme beliefs on reasonable ways and expectations they have of each other, parents of teens and teens of parents, and how to change those. So incentives before punishments, some punishment techniques, problem-solving, communication, training, and then working on changing belief systems, those are the remaining steps of the intervention.
Seems so easy, right?
Yeah, it sounds so easy, and it may read easily and things I've written, but it really isn't. And, you know, as a psychologist, I sometimes feel I'm only as good as the last family I was able to help.
But I know that feeling. Where do families tend to get stuck the most in this process?
Well, some families get stuck in the beliefs. They have very rigid beliefs, and they're unable to work around that. For example, some families parents may believe that you shouldn't negotiate with a teenager. Teenagers are just there to do what parents expect. They have a very authoritarian outlook, so they may get stuck at that point. That's one. Another place, especially with the ADHD teenagers, especially if one or both parents have ADHD, and we know 50% of the parents of teens with ADHD also have ADHD, even if nobody diagnosed it yet, that the parents let the teens push their buttons, explode, lose it, and make extremely unreasonable statements that they can't possibly carry out, and then the teens get off the hook. So teenager may stay out late past curfew, for example, and they negotiated a careful agreement about curfew, and the teen broke the agreement. The parents may say, "You're grounded for life," yell and scream. They can't possibly carry that out. Or teen brings home an E or an F on a report card. You're grounded until the next report card comes out. Those kinds of extreme statements made impulsively, that's another place parents get stuck.
There's a few comments that I'd like to make here. One is an observation, and Dr. Robin, I'd like you to comment on this. In coaching people on my side, it's been interesting to me because many times when there's a younger person I'm dealing with, a lot of times I find that the parent that has ADHD that's not diagnosed has been casted in a job that works for them, and they've got compensatory strategies that has worked for them, and it worked for them, so it's got to work for everybody around them, and they try to force that on everybody because it worked for them. It's almost kind of like tunnel vision. Is there any, again, I'm not a researcher or anything, it's just my experience. Do you think there's anything to that, or?
Oh, absolutely. For example, the highly overcompensated parent who has ADHD may or may not realize it, but the only way this parent makes it through the day is by compensating by being super organized, using timers, alarms, and other stuff, and it works for that parent, but then that parent expects the teenager to do all the same type of stuff, and that's not what teenagers are into. They're not going to use the same compensatory techniques that work for mom or dad, so that's an example of what you said, and I see that quite a bit, and actually the parent and teen are very much alike in their nature, but the parent can't see that. You got to be flexible and try to see where the teen's at to figure out how to help them cope.
The other thing I want to do is we had a comment in our chat room that I thought was interesting We were talking about, you know, praise and stuff, and basically the comment is, you know, agree about the gushy things. Like sometimes when you're a parent, you do some things that your child goes, well, they blow it off because, you know, hey, you're my dad or you're my mom. That you have to say these things. And I kind of go back to earlier at the top of the show, you said sometimes the parents can do this and sometimes you need third-party intervention. I want to move forward, but I want to also acknowledge, I think it was a great comment for the person in the chat room, is that, yes, in fact, sometimes you need a third party to come in because you can do these things right, but because of the bias of the child, they're not going to listen to you just because they think you have to do it. Is that dynamic?
That's absolutely true. My favorite anecdote on that is I once had a family, this was a long time ago, who came, and they'll remain nameless, but the details are disguised, but the basic thing was, they called and said that they had been reading passages from my Negotiating Parent Adolescent book to their teenager at the dinner table for the last 6 months, and the teen wasn't appreciating the passages and learning from them, so they wanted to bring the teen to see me.
You don't like it when he writes it. You love it when he tells it to your face, right?
So that was a setup for failure as a therapist.
Yeah. And you know something, Kirsten started laughing immediately, and all I could just like I could feel the vibe coming in, kind of like this is walking the door. What am I going to do with this?
Jeez.
And I remind everybody, this week's featured video on Attention Talk Video is Are Your Teens Coachable? I interviewed Jody Sleeper Triplett, and you know sometimes there's a dynamic with a team, and I don't want to spend a lot of time on it because I do want to get into some more specifics, but I did want to acknowledge that out there, and I think it's kind of a real situation sometimes as a third party is kind of involved. So, Dr. Robin, can you set up some scenarios and kind of talk your way through it so people can kind of see how this might play out?
Well, one area where I'd like to set up a scenario, if it's okay, is what problem solving actually
okay.
looks
yeah,
like.
Yeah, that's a great one.
Because problem solving is really something that's been around for a long time. The basic steps have been used in the business world for decades. Define the problem, brainstorm, or generate a list of solutions, review the solutions one by one, and see which ones would work to solve the problem, which ones would not, and then reach an agreement, and then plan how you're going to do it and carry it out. When I teach this to families, the scenario is I say to them, I'm going to be like a stage director today, and it's going to be like we're in a play, and you pick a topic. Let's say they pick the topic of curfew, and then I'm going to show you start and stop the action. It's going to seem a little artificial, and I'm going to help you see that you really can perhaps reach an agreement on this. And then I take them through each step. Like I say, well, define the problem. That means start with the word I and tell your teenager. I usually have the parents do this first so the teen gets examples what it is about curfew that is a problem for you and why. And then I will model it. For instance, if I were you, I might be saying, I get angry when we have a 11 o'clock agreed upon curfew and you come home an hour late without calling me. Now, in your own words, say it. So I kind of model it, then have them give their definition, and as soon as that happens, I turn to the teen and say, what did your mom or dad just say? Repeat it back to me, because I'm trying to teach them to listen, reflect, and validate. And then when they do that, I say, okay, now tell that to your mom or dad. And then I say, mom or dad, did he get it or she get it the way you meant it? So each person gets a chance to say their definition of the problem, and another family member paraphrases it back till we have three definitions on the floor, and I point out that they're not the same. The teen's definition may be, all my friends have 1 a.m. curfews, and I'm not going to have any friends left if I have to come home by 11 o'clock or something like that, which is very different perspective, and I point out it's okay to have differences. So that's a kind of scenario when I'm teaching problem solving and getting them to get their views on the problem out. And after we've done that, then I say, we're going to be like creative. For the next 5-10 minutes, give me all the ideas you can think of anything goes, as crazy as it could be, to solve this problem. And somebody writes them all down. Either I write them down or the parents or teen write them down. And I tell them to think of anything, even if they would never do it. And usually what happens is the teen says things like, never have a curfew, stay out all night. The parents say, 6 p.m. curfew. They start with very extreme things. And I'm looking for them to move towards things that could be compromises, but I'm not giving them the solutions. I'm coaching them to come up with their own solutions, and I'm facilitating the process of problem solving. And we do that for 5 or 10 minutes. It's usually you quickly have about 8 or 10 ideas. And when I'm doing this as a therapist, if a family's doing this without a therapist, it could be a little tricky. When I'm doing this as a therapist, I wait until it looks like there's a few ideas which are likely compromises, like maybe have a later curfew one weekend day, or maybe only for special events or things like that. So that's a little bit of the scenario of what the first two steps of problem solving look like. Should I go on, or do you want to comment?
Well, actually, if we can pause here for a second, I got to tell you something. You know, you're coming from it from one perspective, but everybody knows I'm a coach. That's my background. I'm not a mental health professional, but I got to tell you, you're just writing script out of the Coaches Training Institute perspective coaching. Because what you do is you kind of get anchored in the perspective, and then you brainstorm to come up with other perspectives, and you find some stuff. And what you were talking about let's get kind of creative and kind of come up with these ideas to kind of see what's out there, actually opens the door. As an aside, when I'm working with people, one of the barriers to that is people will jump to outcome. And I say, no, don't worry about outcome right now. Just worry about if you could do anything in the world, because if you jump to outcome, it shuts down some of these creative ideas. And it's amazing, absolutely amazing, that the brilliant ideas you can come up with if you don't look at the outcome.
Right. I interrupt any attempts to go to outcome and just say, no, we'll evaluate later.
It's funny, because I was working with somebody earlier today. They were in a job, and they were very creative. How are we going to bring it to it? And they said it was a very regulated industry about a newsletter. And they were like, they were thinking that term. And I said, let's back up and imagine you could do anything you want. And all of a sudden, this person came up with these brilliant ideas, like ask so and so with regard, like comments and this. And they got very, very creative when they got away from outcome. And where we ended up with was this brilliant idea that had possibilities, that was very stimulating to this person with ADHD to move forward in an ordinarily boring environment. So I absolutely love what you're saying, and impact ADHD out there. When you get tagged on Facebook, you'll know why. A little inside joke here, really. But what he's talking about here is so much of like a coaching philosophy, and sitting down with your teams and brainstorming that. So with that, I love what you're saying, Dr. Robin. So can you continue and just keep going with it?
Sure, and it is really in that sense very similar to coaching, and it really goes way back to a businessman named Osborne in the 1930s who originated the notion of brainstorming a long, long time ago. So going on with it, after families have a list of solutions and it looks like there might be some that are doable, I then say, okay, now we're going to go back and evaluate. And I give them a sheet where we've written down the solutions, if it's a mom, a dad, and a teenager, with three columns. And I say, we're going to take each idea and tell each other whether it would solve your problem the way you defined it, the other person's problem, and give it a plus or minus. Nothing in between is possible. You got to rate each one plus or minus. So I'm trying to teach them consequential thinking, projecting what would happen if. And one other thing is important to say about the solution listing, that for a few decades now, researchers in child development have been studying the relationship of problem-solving skills to adjustment in adult life. And it's been clearly found repeatedly that the ability to generate more than one solution to a problem is strongly correlated with positive mental health adjustment in adulthood. And so there's a very strong empirical basis for teaching solution listing. The second most important skill for related to adjustment, is this projecting the consequences? When you evaluate, you say, will this idea work? What would happen in the future if we did this or if we didn't? Youngsters with ADHD, they don't do time very well. They don't project consequences. They live for the moment. So you have them do this, then you're getting them to think consequentially, to think about future time, what the effects might be, not just the moment. We go through the whole list. We end up with a sheet with three columns of pluses or minuses for each solution for each family. And then I try to go with consensus decision making. Are there any ideas on the list that both parents and the teenager, if we have three people present, the parent and the teen, if it's a mom or a dad and a teen, that everybody present rated plus? And if everybody present didn't rate it plus, what are we closest to agreement on? Surprisingly, if you go through this exercise and cut off negative communication and keep them from prematurely evaluating ideas, there's one, at least one, often more than one, that everybody rated positively. It kind of surprises families, but that happens. And when that happens, the last step now is figure out who's going to do what, when, where, and how, work out the details. If that doesn't happen, if we don't have a consensus, then I go back and I do what I would call fancy footwork negotiation to try to see where they were closest to agreement and try to get them to reach an agreement. So,
wow. It's funny. I would like to do a whole show where we just play just your beginning to end in critique it. There's so much brilliance. And there's so many, I could spend an hour talking about, the whole thing at the beginning about, like, running a movie and you're going to stop and start and that kind of stuff because you're shifting it and all that kind of stuff in the agreement and kind of coming together and stopping the negative outcome. There's so much brilliance in kind of what you're doing. To our listeners right now, I'm trying to synthesize this a little bit because I might have said too much. It's brilliant what you did, at least from my perspective. And there's so many things that I kind of like to point out. So I'm going to shut up and think for a second. Kirsten, I think you got a question. You want to jump in real quick?
You think I have a question because you want to shut up and think for a second. Go right ahead. That was a nice strategy there, Jeff. I'm thinking, what we're trying to have Dr. Robbins summarize in two short shows is actually a really big piece of work. Dr. Robin, you can comment, how long are you typically working with families to go through these steps?
You mean how long does it take to do a problem-solving discussion?
Well, no, to do the whole, the whole 10 steps, because you're working
whole,
with families from the whole beginning of, learning to have positive one-on-one time and learning how to, find them doing something positive or neutral and then, working with
right.
You've got 10 steps in this. So how long does it take typically for a family to go through this process to get the outcome that they're looking for?
Well, usually it's going to take a good 4 to 6 months or a little longer. But having said that, I'm not seeing them every week, because they need time to do things. So I'm at the very beginning, I might see a family 3 or 4 times weekly, but after that, it's every other week, occasionally every third week. So it stretches out over 4 to 6 months, with the interval between sessions gradually increasing so that they could see that they could maintain the changes with less help from me. But I would say 4 to 6 months. And often what happens is, along the way, if the outcomes are positive, other things come up that they also want help with that are variations mm-hmm. on a theme. But a good 4 to 6 months meeting again every other week after a few weekly
right.
sessions.
And do you ever find that they get partway through this and things really turn around to the point where maybe they don't need to continue the whole program? They've kind of it's resolved itself just because they've done the first few steps, or do most families go through the whole process?
Every different thing that you said happens.
Okay.
Oftentimes families, as you said, they don't need to go through the process. if they set an escalating positive change in place, a whole bunch of things start changing in positive directions, and suddenly they don't need help in changing every single negative communication habit because it starts to vanish because suddenly the atmosphere is positive. So, as you said, they don't need as much help, and a lot of things fall into place. On the other hand, there are some families who, particularly if there are comorbid or coexisting conditions like depression, anxiety, ASD spectrum disorders, a whole bunch of coexisting conditions going along, the going is much rougher. If you have a one parent who is depressed, for example, if you have a youngster who has moody outburst, aside from that, and then it takes much longer and the outcomes are not as rosy.
So do you, I mean, Jeff talked earlier about how some of these interventions are right in line with coaching strategies. Do you ever, like, partner up with a coach so that they're actually reinforcing some of these skills, you know, in between these sessions with the families?
I've done that more in my work with adults with ADHD mm-hmm. than I have with parents and teenagers with ADHD. Huh. But, you know, folks like Jody, whose video you mentioned, are outstanding at what they do, and they do very similar things. But it just hasn't worked out that way with the families that they've also been wanting to work with a coach. But it has with adults with ADHD.
I apologize.
Is that enough time to think, Jess?
I'm sorry?
Was that enough time for you to come up?
Yes. I got all kinds of thoughts right now. You did.
I got a million more questions.
We need to go to a commercial break real quick. So, Dr. Robbins, can you share your email address again and how people can access your book?
Well, the book, Your Defiant Teen, they can access most easily either at the Guilford Press site or at Amazon, and they could reach me at arobin@med.wayne.edu is my email.
And everybody, with that, we'll be right back after these messages.
You're listening to Attention Talk Radio. We'll return in a moment. Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
Experience the difference with a top-notch ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to addca.com and click on Find a Coach.
Make every moment count with Time Timer, a sensitive solution for ADHD time management. It shows how much time is left using a bright red disc that gets smaller as time passes. To place an order for a Time Timer, all you have to remember is timetimer.com.
We are CHAD, the nation's leading nonprofit organization serving the community impacted by ADHD. CHAD and Attention Magazine provide science-based information about ADHD to families, professionals, the media, and the general public. Attention is the only publication in which your paid advertising promotes the mission of leadership, advocacy, research, education, and support for the ADHD community. Interested? Advertise in Attention Magazine and CHAD's website at chadd.org or call 240-487-2314.
And now, back to Attention Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everybody, to this edition of Attention Talk Radio. We're having another stellar interview with Dr. Robin tonight. I don't know if I can beg one more time, but we might have to have him come back, Kirsten, because it's nothing but great stuff here.
Well, thank you very much.
I want to make a few – we don't have a whole heck of a lot of time left, but there's a few things that have struck me. Kirsten, I did have a chance to think while you were asking some brilliant questions, and there's – I was listening to Dr. Robbins and what he's doing, and there's so much coach-like stuff that he's doing, but I also remember earlier in the show he actually referenced cognitive behavioral therapy, And I can't help but reference a show that we did a little over a year ago with Barbara Luther, who's a master certified coach, and Dr. Ari Tuckman. Barbara was representing the ADHD coaching side, and Dr. Tuckman was representing the cognitive behavioral therapy side. And we were talking about what's the difference, and it was funny, kind of towards the show, they were talking about some things, and Dr. Tuckman said, heck, a good idea is a good idea. I don't care where it came from. And there's a lot of coaching and cognitive behavioral therapy that kind of come together a little bit here. And I really think that from my observation and interviewing people, there's a lot of things that are kind of coming together. And I think that what Dr. Robbins, there's a, probably a spin from a cognitive behavioral therapy side and a coaching side, but I can tell you on the coaching side, I think it's brilliant. The other thing that I wanted to offer up is when you have a kid, my first child was born, and we came home, and my wife didn't bring home the manual, and I hit the ceiling. I mean, where's the user manual? I mean, after all, how am I supposed to deal with this? And so we went back for the second kid, and I said, listen, we're not leaving the hospital without the manual. And she did it a second time. And so we've been flying blind ever since then. I use that kind of in just because every child is a little different, and they all have their own individual user manual. And while my wife didn't bring them home because they're not available, you know, one of the things about it is not everybody was born a great parent, and it, not necessarily bad, but you can go to people like Dr. Robin and learn these skills and mirror it, because you can adjust your parenting style. And after all, if you've never been taught how to do this, you're working off of instinct or maybe how you learned before. And I think a lot can be learned from the simple things that Dr. Robin has. Just, hey, walk in, learn these types of techniques, and because that's the part that you can change. Now, Dr. Robin, I'm saying all this stuff, and I want to make sure that I'm not misrepresenting what you said or what I'm saying or anything like that. But can you comment? Are those good comments, or would you like to correct anything I said?
No, those are really good comments. I'd add a few things. First of all, the last part, you know, where is the user manual for parenting youngsters with ADHD who might have oppositional behavior? The CHAD parent-to-parent course is a user manual on how to parent kids with ADHD from birth to adulthood. And pretty much everything that I'm telling you this evening, one way or another, has been incorporated along with a lot of other really good stuff into the parent-to-parent class. So I would strongly urge parents, if they have a CHAD chapter coordinator in their region who is trained on parent-to-parent, to take that course. If they don't, consider the online version. That's the closest thing to a user manual that's very parent-friendly that I'm aware of.
And you've been a CHAD, you know Beth Kaplanik, right?
Excuse me?
Are you familiar with Beth Kaplanik?
Yeah, yes, she helped to develop parent-to-parent.
She did, and we interviewed her, oh my God, it was like January or February back in 2010 or something like that. So you guys can dig back in our archives and hear it from the horse's mouth, because she actually helped develop it. And Dr. Robbins, I'm really glad you brought it up, because it is a great resource. We've only got a few minutes left. And again, I have to go back and look at our material, because we might have to do another sequel to this, because Dr. Robbins, you're absolutely amazing. But with the time we got left, any other little nuggets you want to share before we wrap things up?
Well, you know, you were pointing out, again, not every parent is born intrinsically being a good parent. But if a parent wants to take 2, 3, or 4 key words or phrases that would help them improve their parenting, I think, you know, the key words or phrases, one would be a great deal of warmth, love, and affection. Another one would be a moderate but not extreme degree of structure, together with a great deal of warmth and affection. So very high on the warmth and affection, moderate on the degree of structure, and take what has been called an authoritative approach rather than authoritarian. Authoritarian means it's my way or the highway. Laissez-faire means do whatever you like. Authoritative means I'm there, I love you, saying this to a child. I'm there for you. There are things you can make up your mind about, but there's certain things that I still need to make the final decision on. So those
Excellent.
Would be authoritative, moderately high structure, and a great deal of warmth.
And Dr. Robbins, thank you so much for coming on. It's been a great interview, as always. We will be back in touch. There's your plethora of material. So, again, thank you so much for coming on the show.
You're welcome. I enjoyed it a lot.
And with that, everybody, thanks for joining us for this edition of Attention Talk Radio. Next week, we're actually starting a special edition. We're having Rob Todisco on for the next 5 episodes, and we're going to be talking about basically the life cycle of teens when ADHD go bad. Section 504, IEPs, if your teen is arrested but not accused, and stuff like that. So look for those editions coming up, and we'll talk to you soon. Take care.